Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for February 23rd, 2023. I'm Naima Latif, and today we're taking a look at the trip of the First Lady Jill Biden. She's traveling to Namibia. Dr. Jill Biden is visiting the country of Namibia in southern Africa to start a five-day African trip. It is historic, and she is expecting to make some historic events happen as she travels throughout Africa. The First Lady's trip is part of a commitment by President Joe Biden to deepen U.S. engagement with the fast-growing region. Namibian dancers and the president welcome Dr. Jill Biden to Africa. And Windhoek, Namibia, dancers, drummers, and Namibia's president and first lady welcome U.S. First Lady Dr. Jill Biden on Wednesday as she opened a five-day, two-country visit to Africa aimed at highlighting the challenges facing women and young people and the food insecurity plaguing the Horn of Africa. After flying all night, the First Lady was seated at the airport by members of some of Namibia's ethnic groups clad in red, white, and blue, or bright pink, who greeted her with singing, dancing, drumming, and ululating. Of course, you know that's the sound that's made of celebration. The last high-level U.S. official to visit the vice president was Vice President Al Gore in 1996, the White House said. The First Lady's trip is a part of a commitment by President Joe Biden to deepen U.S. engagement with the fast-growing region. The United States has fallen well behind China in investment in sub-Saharan Africa, which has become a key battleground and an increasingly fraught competition between the major powers. Jill Biden and Monica Gengos, Namibia's first lady, embraced on the tarmac before Jill Biden greeted U.S. and Namibian diplomatic and governmental officials. The two first met in December when dozens of African leaders flew to Washington for a summit hosted by President Biden. After leaving the airport, Jill Biden was driven 45 minutes south of Windhoek, the capital, to lay a wreath at Heroes Acre, Namibia's official war memorial. She later met with President Haig Gengop and his wife at the State House, where her arrival was heralded with more singing and dancing. It's Jill Biden's sixth time in Africa, but her first trip as First Lady. She is following in the footsteps of her recent predecessors, who all made the trip across the Atlantic Ocean in the name of trying to help foster goodwill toward the United States. "We have a lot to accomplish," she said Tuesday before departing Washington. Africa is the fastest growing and youngest region in the world, according to the White House, which says one of every four people in the world will be African by 2050. Jill Biden previously visited Africa in 2010, 2011, twice in 2014, and once in 2016, all during her husband's service as U.S. Vice President. Two of those trips were with him. Now, of course, the White House statement that Africa is the fastest growing and youngest region in the world is reflective of a worldview that has just recently begun a counting of time with the emergence of the United States as a world power. However, the many nations across the world realize that in a counting of time, Africa is in fact the oldest region in the world and most definitely contains the most ancient history and artifacts of civilization. But in these times in which nations have received a great amount of destruction as a result of wars and disturbances, Africa is perhaps the youngest nation to begin the recovery process of recent destruction. And this is what is reflected in that viewpoint, seeing as how much of Africa's destruction came at the hands of the international slave trade, in which the United States benefited greatly from Africa's economic destruction. So this trip, as First Lady, is a historic statement in making relations with Africa that of mutual benefit as opposed to exploitation by the Western nations. This time, Dr. Biden is traveling to Africa without President Joe Biden, who was wrapping up a trip to Poland to mark Friday's anniversary of Russia's aggression toward Ukraine. Dr. Jill Biden brought along her granddaughter, Naomi Biden. Patricia Nixon was the first lady to travel to Africa on her own. She was the first lady to travel to Africa on her own. She went as President Nixon's personal representative to Liberia, Ghana, and the Ivory Coast in 1972. She addressed legislative bodies and met with African leaders about U.S. policy toward the country now known as Zimbabwe and human rights in South Africa, according to the National First Ladies Library. What recent First Ladies did on their visit to Africa? Well, Melania Trump. Melania Trump visited for the first time in 2018 when she spent 5 days as First Lady stopping in Ghana, Malawi, Kenya, and Egypt to promote U.S. developmental aid and education, cradle babies, and highlight animal and historic preservation. She traveled without President Donald Trump, who had denied making disparaging comments about African countries. She opened the trip at an infant clinic in Ghana. She also learned about Africa's slave past during a tour of Cape Coast Castle, a former slave-holding facility on the Ghanaian coast. She spent time inside the cramped dungeon once used to house male slaves and walked through the door of no return from which the slaves were shipped to the New World. In Malawi, the former model toured indoor and outdoor classrooms, observed lessons, and watched students play soccer with U.S.-donated balls. She highlighted elephant preservation in Nairobi National Park in Kenya. She closed the tour in Egypt by touring the pyramids and the Great Sphinx to highlight U.S.-supported preservation efforts there. Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama went to South Africa and Botswana on a goodwill mission in the summer of 2011 to promote youth leadership, education, and HIV and AIDS awareness. The centerpiece of the week-long trip by America's first black First Lady
was a 30-minute speech at a U.S.-sponsored leadership conference at a church in Soweto Township. The church became a popular refuge during the South African people's fight against apartheid, the now abolished system of government-imposed segregation. She was accompanied by her daughters, Malia and Sasha, her mother, Marion Robinson, and a niece and nephew. Michelle Obama also took her daughters to visit with former South African President Nelson Mandela at his home. She made a second solo visit to Africa in June 2016, the final year of the Obama administration. In Liberia and Morocco, she promoted her Let Girls Learn initiative to encourage developing countries to educate girls. She also visited Ghana with President Barack Obama in 2009, his first year in office. Laura Bush. Laura Bush traveled to Africa 5 times on her own from 2005 to 2007 during President George W. Bush's second term, in addition to 2 trips she took with him. Her trips mostly focused on promoting the administration's efforts to combat the spread of HIV as well as malaria. She also emphasized literacy, drug prevention, and national parks. During one stop in South Africa, she praised HIV-positive mothers for working to erase the stigma associated with the disease. She spoke openly with African women about taking control of their sex lives. Laura Bush also announced millions of dollars in U.S. funding for programs to stem the spread of AIDS and mosquito-borne malaria. In Mozambique, she covered her face with a white mask to help illustrate the benefits of spraying homes with insecticides to combat malaria. She also passed out mosquito nets. She was accompanied on these trips by one or both of her twin daughters, Barbara and Jenna. Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton took her 17-year-old daughter, Chelsea, on her 2-week visit in March 1997 to Senegal, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Tanzania, Uganda, and Eritrea. The First Lady opened her journey at Gori Island in Senegal, a hub for the Atlantic slave trade for 300 years. Hillary Clinton said she wanted to see the island because of its significance to Black Americans. She discussed violent crime in South Africa, along with the need to improve education for Black people in a country that recently had abolished its apartheid policy of racial segregation. Hillary Clinton returned in 1998 when President Bill Clinton made his first visit to Africa. It was also the first visit to the continent by a U.S. president in 20 years. The White House billed the 12-day tour of Ghana, Rwanda, Uganda, South Africa, Botswana, and Senegal as a way to encourage trade and investment in Africa. And this information was provided by the Associated Press. And it was published in the Bel Air News. No, that's incorrect. No, it was the NBC News. Excuse me. And, of course, the First Lady's trip signaled a perhaps improved relationship with the entire continent of Africa, which has been a focus of attention from China and its growing industry and the minerals needed for much of the electronics produced out of China. So the various African nations that are at various levels of economic growth and political reorganization are in a position to create alliances based on which nations present the best opportunities for fair trade and reciprocity when it comes to development and opportunities. So as Dr. Jill Biden continues her trip, there are many angles to consider, and there are many opportunities that those who are looking to do business in Africa may be able to take advantage of if there are relationships that could, in fact, be fostered as a result of this trip. And if the response to Dr. Jill Biden is positive, then, of course, the Biden administration will be able to see the benefits in improved relationships and improved opportunities for two-way trade.
Well, Jill Biden is spending a few days in Africa. It's her first visit to the continent since becoming First Lady. She will visit Namibia and Kenya in an effort to strengthen relations with the two countries before wrapping up her trip Sunday. Joining us now to talk a little bit more about this is Cameron Hudson. He's a senior associate in the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I'm glad you're here. You know, the Biden administration had sort of suggested, I think, maybe a month ago or so, that it was important to strengthen relationships with African nations. But I think whatever was on the agenda before the war in Ukraine has probably shifted a little. They were also focusing on, you know, Southeast Asia and Asia, and they've had to put a lot of attention into Ukraine. So Africa hasn't gotten the attention that perhaps they had wanted to before. Is it significant that the First Lady is visiting these two countries specifically?
Well, I think it's significant any time a U.S. leader and someone of this level goes to Africa. They're not common trips. I think it's even more significant, as you suggest, given the backdrop of the Ukraine war, of the amount of time and attention that U.S. officials had been devoting to rolling back autocracy in Europe. I think the Africans have felt like they've been getting sort of short shrift, even though the Biden administration has gone to great lengths in the last 6 months or so to kind of underline and footstomp its support for African countries.
And that, of course, was a recent report from CBS News. And one of the issues that has come to the surface is the fact that Africa has seemingly been on the back burner since the war in the Ukraine, even though there are issues of war and issues of instability in various nations across the African continent that need addressing and perhaps assistance. So as the White House continues to give reports on what is happening in the Ukraine, there also is a hope that the other nations of the world that are affected by the United States and its economic decisions will also receive the same amount of attention. And here is a brief look at today's White House briefing and updates with White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. And one of the issues, as always, is what is the latest on the war in Ukraine? What is the latest response to aircraft from China shot down out of U.S. airspace and unknown craft. And is there a way to avert some of the unfortunate responses that have occurred as a result of these decisions?
It is orange season. If you missed the memo yesterday. Okay. So at the top, I want to say that our hearts go out to the family of Dylan Lyons, the Spectrum News reporter killed in Orange County, Florida yesterday, and to the families of the other two community members who were killed by the same shooter, including a 9-year-old girl with her whole life in front of her. The girl's mother and a Spectrum photojournalist were also seriously injured, and we are keeping them in our thoughts and hoping they have a full recovery. Too many lives are being ripped apart by gun violence. The president continues to call on Congress to act on gun safety and for state officials to take action at the state level. But instead of following in the footsteps of so many other states taking common sense action to enact state-level assault weapons ban and other gun safety measures, Republican state officials in Florida are currently leading an effort to pass permitless concealed carry law, which would eliminate the need to get a license to carry a concealed weapon. This is the opposite of common sense gun safety, and the people of Florida, who have paid a steep price for state and congressional inaction on guns, from Parkland to Pulse nightclub to Pine Hills, deserve better. Now I'm going to turn to Ohio. I know many of you have been covering what has been occurring in Ohio this past couple of weeks, but I also wanted to give you a brief update on the federal response by the Environmental Protection Agency to the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. As you know, Secretary Buttigieg is there today meeting with emergency responders and the Department of Transportation investigators who were on the ground within hours of the train derailing. He met with the community leaders, including the mayor and the fire chief, and received an update from the National Transportation Safety Board on their investigation. EPA Administrator Regan also visited East Palestine for a second time on Tuesday. While there, he ordered the railroad company Norfolk Southern to clean up its mess and pay or reimburse for all of the expenses. If the company doesn't, the EPA said it'll make the company pay three times the cost of whatever cleanup is needed. Federal teams have been on the ground since 2 a.m. on February 4th, which is, again, hours after the derailment, which was on February 3rd. They've been working to hold the railroad company accountable, investigate the derailment, monitor the air and water, and have screened over 550 homes. And we'll stay on this as long as it takes. That is what the president has directed his multi-agency agency heads to do, and as we have seen him speak to these past couple of days, actually. I also have some news on the president's schedule tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, President Biden will gather with G7 leaders and President Zelensky for a virtual meeting to continue coordinating our efforts to support Ukraine and hold Russia accountable for its war. 1 year ago, this group came together just mere hours after Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine to impose unprecedented costs on Putin and his cronies. We've worked together to provide Ukraine with the security, economic and budget humanitarian and energy assistance it needs. We thank Japan, the new G7 president, for its recent pledge to provide Ukraine with an additional $5.5 billion in economic assistance. On this challenge and many more, Japan has proven a steadfast ally, ready to step up and do its part to advance our shared interests and values. Our alliance with Japan and Japan's strong partnerships with countries in Europe only demonstrate the point we've been making all along. The Indo-Pacific and the Atlantic are not separate theaters here, but firmly linked together. The G7 has become an anchor of our strong and united response to Russia. Tomorrow, the leaders will discuss how we continue supporting Ukraine and continue to increase pressure on Putin and all those who enable his aggression. Among other announcements, the United States will implement sweeping sanctions against key sectors that generate revenue for Putin, go after more Russian banks, Russia's defense and technology industry, and actors in third-party countries that are attempting to backfill and evade our sanctions. We will also announce new economic, energy, and security assistance to help the Ukrainians continue to succeed on the battlefield, protect its people from Russian aggression, and enable the Ukrainian government to provide basic services such as electricity and heat. As the President made clear in Europe this week, the United States will continue to stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes. Now, separately, I want to add that the Biden administration welcomes the Sultanate of Oman's decision to open its airspace to all civilian planes, including those flying to and from Israel. This historic step completes a process that began last year during President's visit to the Middle East, when Saudi Arabia similarly opened its airspace to all civilian planes. Oman's announcement promotes President Biden's vision for a more integrated, stable, and prosperous Middle East region. Now, I also want to give an update on a wave of anti-equality bills filed across America in recent weeks. As of yesterday, there have been 450 and counting anti-LGBTQI plus bills filed in state legislatures across the country, including nearly 300 of those bills are targeting kids. These bills are not about expanding access to health care. They're not about making schools safer. They're not about lowering costs for Americans. And they're not about helping address our country's mental health crisis. That is not what these 450 bills are about. All issues that Americans across the board focus on right now are the ones that I just listed. Instead of focusing on making Americans' lives easier, these bills are making our fellow Americans' lives harder. These cheap shots don't come without repercussions. LGBTQI plus Americans, especially transgender Americans, are seeing alarming levels of depression and suicide, as well as being victims of hate crimes. The President and his administration will continue fighting for all Americans and their dignity, because equality under the law isn't just a slogan. It's a bedrock principle of our democracy, and LGBTQI people plus people deserve to live full, equal lives in every corner of our country, no matter where they live.
And that is from the White House, today's press briefing. Again, from Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. And her noting that there seems to be a backlash in the form of legislation that can be interpreted as unfavorable to the LGBTQ plus community. This, of course, is arising as a result of the attention being paid to the legislation that is guaranteeing a respectful quality of life for all. Well, that's all for today. You've been listening to On Air Daily News for Thursday, February 23rd. I'm Naima Latif. Until tomorrow, we want you to enjoy the rest of your day. And if you are in a city where elections are being held, make sure you take time to exercise your right to vote.